9.1 Interviewing, a Matter of Styles. Well, as the title suggests, this section talks about the fact that you have to kind of develop your own characteristics as an interviewer. You have to see what works for you, what doesn't work for you, and we try to get you to think about those things throughout this segment. One of the important things that you have to consider is your attitude as an interviewer. You don't want to go in trying to be everybody's buddy. You don't want to be intimidating. You want to be professional. That's the best word I can use. You want to be professional. That doesn't mean always dressing in a suit and tie or a fancy pantsuit for a woman. Sometimes you have to dress down a little bit to be less intimidating, depending on the circumstance. You're not going to go to a bowling alley and try to stick out like a sore thumb. You want to kind of fit in. Doesn't mean you have to wear a bowling shirt, but it might mean you become a little more casual. But in any case, even if you're in a more casual setting, your attitude has to be professional. Your client does have a right when you leave that office, does have a right to facts that are relevant to his or her case. So sometimes you have to kind of be aggressive and be assertive. Maybe I prefer that word more, being assertive. You do sometimes want to use pressure, but pressure doesn't always work. We talk about that in the textbook. One of my favorite discussion points is, and something that really helped me when I was interviewing, actually I did several interviews along with a couple of attorneys that I worked with. I had seven litigation attorneys I worked with, and sometimes was able to go on interviews with them in people's homes or in parks even and so forth. And I can't remember what attorney taught me this, but it really made a difference for me as an interviewer, that at some point when you're interviewing a witness, you realize that it turns from an interview to an interrogation. That's always for somebody who doesn't want to give you information. Sometimes it's because they're a hostile witness, but not always. Sometimes they just don't want to get involved. But again, you're an advocate for your client, and if your client has a right to this information, you don't just turn around and walk away. You kind of press for it. But you have to realize you want to stay in interview mode as long as you can. Interviewing is a cooperative venture. It's you asking questions and the witness giving answers. But once it turns into an interrogation, that's no longer cooperative. An interrogation is somebody who is providing information not because they want to, but because they feel they have to. So you don't want to cross over into that interrogation mode until you absolutely have to. You want to create a positive, friendly, professional environment, and once it turns to interrogation, it really can't go back. You'll never be able to kind of become the interviewer again. It will always be interrogation from that point forward, both in that interview and in interviews later on, if you have to come back and conduct additional sessions. So just be aware of that and read about that here. It might sound a little confusing, but basically it's a matter of the characterization of the questioning, changing from interviewing to interrogation. Make sure that you have privacy, but especially if you're in an office, I don't recommend closing the door all the way. That can lead to problems of false accusations sometimes. I never had that problem, but an attorney that I was familiar with did, and learned a lesson from it. In fact, our law firm, when we moved into a new building, designed the offices so that they had frosted glass windows kind of in the center, so there was never a feeling that the attorney was alone with a client, even during a busy workday in an office, so that while you couldn't see all the way in, you certainly had an image of the physical beings inside the office, and therefore there was no way that someone could make a false accusation as to something wrong going on in that office. Again, our office didn't have that. Law office didn't have that problem, but they were aware of it in some other law firms, and so were preventative in terms of their design of their office. So for as a paralegal, what you might want to do is just leave the door cracked a little bit when you're conducting an interview. Not wide enough so that everyone can see in and hear, but so that you're never truly in a closed-door situation. You may find that that's not necessary, but it's something that I was aware of. Make sure you choose a suitable setting. For instance, an office interview was very common for me, but if I was going to be showing documents or asking for the witness to be viewing photographs or charts or diagrams, then I chose a conference room. And of course, anything outside the law firm we call a field interview, and you try to avoid noisy places, but sometimes you don't have a choice. You do want to prepare for the interview. We really stress that you prepare questions in advance. The best way I can describe this is, if you're a lawyer, your kind of moment on stage, your Broadway moment, is when you are questioning a witness on the witness stand. And as a lawyer, I can't imagine a lawyer going into a trial and not preparing questions. I can't imagine it. Now, it does happen. I saw it happen. There was a very famous televised case in Las Vegas, the Sandra Murphy case, and her defense attorney, I just couldn't believe it, would stand up and would just kind of ask questions off the cuff. He was just awful. He was a fairly big name attorney, and I wouldn't have given 2 cents for him, because it was obvious that he was not preparing his questions, and he looked awful. He fumbled through documents. He was all over the place in terms of his questions. It was just embarrassing because he hadn't prepared questions. But in most cases, and in every case that I was involved in, where I went to a trial with an attorney, the attorney prepared questions in advance. Well, as a paralegal, you'll never question a witness on the stand. You'll never go to trial and question a witness. But the closest you get to that is interviewing a witness. So why wouldn't you want to do your best, just as an attorney should do his or her best? And if you start preparing questions and you collect those questions, it means that within a couple of years, you're going to have a great form book of questions, probably for any kind of circumstance that you might be involved in. And if 2 years after you're a paralegal, you have an interview that you're going to be conducting, you pull out an old set and modify it, and now you have a new set, and it becomes much easier. The hardest part is the first year or two creating that initial collection of questions for witnesses, but it's something that will really benefit you in the long run. That's another thing, a recollection I have from being a paralegal. I can't remember if I've put this in the book or not, or on the website, but there was a circumstance where I was at trial and listening to the attorney, his name was John, listening to him ask questions, and you know, for the first time in my life, all of a sudden it was like deja vu. It was like, wait, I know that question. I know that next question too. I knew that was going to be the next question, and then it was like I knew what questions were coming up. It was really kind of disconcerting. And I'm trying to figure out what's going on here. And suddenly it occurred to me, we're now at trial, but I had written those questions 9 months before, preparing for an interview of that same witness in her living room. And those interview questions at trial had become a second set of interviews with the attorney involved, because she turned out to be a very important witness. And then they morphed into deposition questions, but still very similar. And then now, here I am 9 months later, and those same questions that I formulated, that I started asking in the living room of this witness quite a while ago, those are now the same questions being asked at trial. And that was just really cool. It was a great feeling. And it helped me to understand how what I did as a paralegal eventually becomes the foundation in some cases for litigation, for the representation during litigation. And that's something you'll be involved with too, even if you don't ever see it quite so dramatically that is the case. What you're doing as a paralegal, those seemingly small things, are the foundation for the really critical steps of representation. And that's part of why I really loved being a paralegal. I think you'll find it just as rewarding as I did.